Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Get big savings on big equipment for one big day at United Rentals on South Frontage Road in Columbus, Thursday, October 2nd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, this is Tiffany Blackston. Call me today for the equipment you're looking for. 662-889-2528. Can't wait to see you on October 2nd.
I heard yesterday there's a new record. Some chef prepared like 19,000 pounds of rice, and it took them 19 hours or something.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it was just for getting the record.
Sure.
I just didn't know that there was a record for how much rice someone had produced. But yes, I learned.
Good morning. Yeah. You know there's a record for everything. We can have a record for, I don't know, how fast my earrings fall off. You know what I mean? There's a record
That's a necessary record, too, the 19,000 pounds of
rice.
I
love that. That was pretty fun. You know, the thing that I don't know if this is true of everybody, but we live in the world of rice, thankfully, here. But there are people that find it very exotic. They're the potato people. I'm okay. I like my potatoes. That's great. No problem. But when it comes down to it, it's all about the bumper sticker, you know. Eat rice. Taters make your butt big. See, I said it. I didn't just play about it today. I actually said it. That came from our friends at, I believe it's the Delta Rice Council. That might be the right name. I'm not sure. Anyway, they'll appreciate that I said anything about it. Okay, we're in the midst of Oktoberfest. Now, what does that mean for us? Well, for us, it actually means that we're planting everything. The shelves yesterday, I was out at Lakeland Yard & Garden. The shelves are full of cabbages and broccolis and cauliflowers, beautiful plants, time to go. Let's get busy, you know, get rocking. I hope everybody's area is having a suitable time frame for all of that because it's really the best time in the world to grow those crops. It's also, they're pretty. So when you're taking annuals out of the flower bed, why not put in a broccoli? It's going to be beautiful and you can eat it. Come on, it's a twofer, you know. And if you let it stay there long enough, yes, it will bloom, but that's not as tasty. I do, however, have a note from someone this week telling me that the Brussels sprouts went to bloom at their house, and so they took the flowers and put them in vinegar, and the vinegar was really very tasty. So that led me to thinking about herbal vinegars and the fact that we don't necessarily do that as much as we might. And I'm going to talk about that at some point today because it's just – this is that time when you're thinking, what am I going to do with all this basil? You know, let's face it, the basil plants in some places are 4 and 5 feet tall, but that's because you haven't started freezing or steeping or making vinegar or whatever else you might do with basil. Some people do dry it. I don't like it as well that way. But if you have the opportunity to harvest some herbs, so especially things that are not going to be that happy in the wintertime, for example, We love parsley, cilantro. That's all going to be wintertime. They just rock and roll just like pansies, okay? But when it comes to things like thyme, those winter rains can be really tough on them. It's one reason we grow them in containers so often, so we can literally move them away from, if it's just a heavy storm, you can move them someplace else. But I'm also thinking about pots of onions that you've started, or you may have onions under a cloche that you've got a cloche ready for out in the garden, you know, in a garden in the ground. Those are both things that are just magnificent at this time of the year. The green onion, particularly at this time, is coming along, and we've got a whole lot of opportunities to use them in herbal vinegars, in marinades, and all that sort of stuff. But some people, you know, they just go out there and graze. They like a good onion, they'll just go have a bite. Why not? Today is Eat an Apple Day. That's good advice every day, isn't it, for a lot of people? But I don't know why they haven't put these two together. It's also Batman Day. Couldn't the Apple people be doing something with Batman today?
Yeah. I mean,
that would just be brilliant.
Adam West, it was his birthday, I think, Friday.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or maybe it was Thursday.
Yeah. This week sometime. We should be doing that. One of my favorite pieces of the old timey Batman, not the comic book, but the actual almost cartoonish Adam West show on television, is that they all had something that they did. I think it was the Frank Gorshin character that juggled. I mean, you know, they got to do these are Hollywood stars coming to work with him, but they got to do their other fun stuff. Burgess Meredith got to sneer at everybody as the Penguin, you know, those kind of things. Just fun stuff for all of them. And if you are a Batman person, you're welcome to let me know who your Batman is. I just realized the text line just fell down. Well, I'll take care of that at the break, or you can tell me if we get anybody in the meantime. I don't know exactly why Oktoberfest is in September, but it is. It's a beautiful series of events between showing off the fall harvest and the fall brews and all that kind of stuff. But it's also a time when a lot of communities come together and cook something. So if your community is having an Oktoberfest, let me know about it. Let me know about it. We would love to hear that. One of the things that came up this week, there's so much stuff going on all the time, but one of the pieces of the puzzle this week has been, how do you know when to use the cloche? And what do you do if it's too wet? Could you still put, you know, if it's already rained a whole lot, should you put the cloche on if you expect more rain? Yes, unless the soil is really, really wet. But there are a lot of subtleties to it. So the biggest question seemed to be, do I like single cover, like the gallon milk jug that I believe I talked about last week, or the ones that go across the row? And frankly, I think they both have their applications. For example, if you do pull out the annuals that are not blooming any longer in a container or in your flower bed, and you plant a broccoli there, or you plant, you know, some other vegetable there, maybe a patch of lettuce, that's a good place for a small cloche that just takes care of them. Because, for example, if they're growing in front of your shrubs, you certainly don't want to cover up your shrubs. But you do want to be able to protect that little vegetable patch from whatever might come along, whatever inclement situation they might get into. This afternoon, by the way, speaking of situations, this is going to be lots of fun. This afternoon is the Magnolia Garden Festival at the Renaissance in Ridgeland. This is 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'll be there very shortly after 10 a.m. Obviously, I'm here till then. I can tell that we're beginning to get our Halloween photos up on supertalk.tv. I'm behind. I'm going to have to send some of that. It's a little early, folks, but we're getting there. We're getting there. There are always things to look at, and particularly because people are starting to put in mums and starting to look at the coleus that have gone to bloom. You know, do you want to save the seed or do you not? Those are the kind of things really that are on everybody's mind at this point in the garden season. And then, of course, we have to think about October. October is really the prime time of, oh, look, there's pumpkins now, of pumpkins. Sometimes this mental connection is just too much. The pictures that I sent of pumpkins, of course, didn't make it. They were not good photos. But there is a photo that I put up last night. No one has guessed it yet. And if you see a little tiny purple flower on a big green leaf, you can tell me what that is. You will also see pictures of one of my very favorite trees. This is the second year I've had the opportunity to watch this gigantic golden rain tree come into bloom. And out in front of the radio station today, there's a little gem magnolia blooming with a big old bee on it. Looks like it has a black blob, but it's actually a great big old bee. And it's just that time. If you've been thinking about a large but not grandiose evergreen, don't overlook Little Jim. It's a good one. Do you have that philodendron yet, Lance? It's a good one. That's Addison's. I love how plants get their names anyway. But the Addison is the one that's called Swiss cheese plant because it literally has almost an even number of holes in the leaves. And it's not the gigantic one. This is a small one. That family has quite a few plants in it. So that's one that if you got it, I appreciate it because it is a beautiful plant. The other plant that...
It's up now. I'm sorry. I was...
No, that's
around.
All right.
Mark sent a bunch too, so I was rifling through beautiful
Well, you had just flown past this one. You can see why it's called Swiss cheese. But it is not the gigantic. This is a monstera, but the monstera that we think of is the one that gets leaves about, you know, as big as your arm, as long as your arm and stuff. This is not that plant. This is in that family, however. And interestingly enough, as you might guess from hearing the name Adanson, it's named for a person named Adanson. It does come from, I don't even know, I think Belgian or something, that his name is originally was Adam's son, kind of that how we things get shortened in different languages. But because he was able to identify this one, he's a naturalist that you know, Charles Darwin regarded very highly. So he's one of those people that literally had enough means to go around the world and look at stuff and then come back and study it and figure out what they had found. And in this case, it's one of many in that philodendron family that we had not seen in the Western world until that 19th century I think 19th century introduction. It was in a couple of conservatories, but then it came to us. Why is that important? Because at this time of the year, you're going to be going into the garden center and you're going to be seeing houseplants that you've not seen before. You're going to be looking at philodendron varieties, maybe some Dracaena varieties. The tricolor that I've also got put up to just put the leaves in today are just beautiful. And these are plants you can live with. These are plants that can live with you. So I encourage you to explore a little bit. If you like one philodendron, try another. You may find that there are some that can take a little bit more light. There are some that really need less light than most of the philodendrons. So give yourself that opportunity to take a few different things. And, yeah, the mums are everywhere. They are lovely. They are beautiful. And I'm telling you, between candelabras and mums, you can get plenty of orange and yellow and brilliant shades of gold at this time of the year. That is for true. I hate to say but I had to say there. When thinking about beets, I talked to someone this week who has – their beets are about 6 inches tall, and they were saying that they didn't thin them. So I'm going to tell you, you got to thin them because they were literally right next to each other, the little plants. Because we do that. We don't expect the seeds to come up, okay? It's kind of magic. So we plant the seeds, and then when they all come up, it's, what do we do now? Well, if your beets are 4 inches tall and you've not thinned them, today is the day. But you have to be real careful because you don't want to disturb the ones you're leaving. And you got it, depending on which beet it is, if you're growing Detroit Red, they need 2 inches between plants at minimum. All right? If you're growing some of the smaller beets, they can be a little bit closer together, but still 2 inches is a pretty good rule of thumb. And if you've got three more little plants in between those two, don't just yank them out because you may mess up and pull out the other one. Get yourself some small tool. It could even be a screwdriver. Yeah, the joke with this friend was her fingernails are long enough she could actually do this with her fingernails. I said, but you paid for those. Don't do that. But literally get there and just lift them out so that you're not disturbing the soil around the other two. I have seen this happen. It hadn't happened to me, but I've seen it happen, and I've been asked to explain what happened. The row gets thinned out, and then the next thing you know, 2 days later, everything else is just wilted completely. And it's because they were too rough in the thinning, waited a little too long, first of all, but then were too rough in the thinning. And that's how you end up with those teeny tiny carrots that you see at supertalk.tv now. It's because you didn't thin them most of the time. There's also in growing root crops, if you've tried several times and just, you know, you've got soil that drains well, you've got enough water, you've got enough sun, you've got enough fertilizer, and you still can't get that carrot or that beet or that turnip to do what you want it to do, consider the trace elements. Sometimes the soils are just missing the minor elements, not nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. You're putting that on, and even if you're putting on a complete fertilizer that has some of those elements in it, you may or may not get enough for the root crops if there's a particular deficiency. So you may want to apply those before you plant the next time. And it's usually just a small bottle, and you mix it up and pour it into the soil. There are some granular ones, but I haven't seen those in a long time. It's a real helpful way, quick way to get the minor elements into your soil, and they are absolutely essential for root crops. Root crops take a lot out of the soil. They're when we talk about those plants that are able to produce our own nitrogen from the air, and then we talk about the scientific studies that tell us we're going to be able to do more versions of that. Root crops are one of the things I wish they would make, figure out a way to engineer so that they can make their own nitrogen, because then you wouldn't have to do anything except ensure that the soil below was in good shape, and you would always have the opportunity for those without ending up with two others, not having to apply fertilizer all the time is the point. I think the more we can streamline these processes, the better off we're going to be when it comes to trying to get people to actually garden. I was in a grocery store the other day, and somebody said they knew it was coming up towards Rosh Hashanah, and said, "You know, you usually make matzo ball soup, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, is it going to be expensive?" I said, no, hens are still cheap. But I'm telling you what, the dairy products that go in the kugel are getting expensive. Now, if you've never eaten noodle pudding, and if it sounds horrible to you, I'm sorry, but it is an absolutely delightful dish. It's one of the few things that has apricots and raisins in it that I actually like. So if you've not encountered noodle pudding, but if you don't take my word for it, the famous chef Jonathan Waxman actually makes one that's quite savory that sounded like it would be lovely, except I didn't want that. I want my sweet kugel. But it's true that everything in the dairy aisle is getting more expensive. Cheeses and all those things, you know, everything's just getting – it's more difficult for us not to acquire, but maybe to afford in some cases. So if we can grow some vegetables, if we can produce some of our own things like herbal vinegars to use for marinades and salad dressings, if we can do these things ourselves, then we can actually make our own way a little bit better. And if nothing else, feel more confident and have better food. You can always grow better food than you'll ever be able to buy. So that's for sure. I have a piece of advice for you today. Information from a university in Spain is telling us that our brain rhythms actually have a secret switch that we haven't known about before. Now it's not a secret because now we do, that triggers between old memories and new adventures. Okay, your brain flashes differently for both of those in the telling, for example. So my suggestion is to keep your brain balanced and to keep things moving. Every time you tell a story about something that happened back in the when, tell a story about something that happened today. Keep yourself in both places at the same time. And friend, I'll tell you what, your grandchildren will appreciate it. Because then they'll know the old stories, but they won't believe you're living there. And in the same thing, it also encourages you to get out and do some new stuff. They found a master switch, and it's very, very exciting. This is wonderful things that are, by fine-tuning that balance, they are really in hopes of being able to get a little bit more for us. Wow, we've been talking about a dust storm this morning. We could sure use some of this, couldn't we? Here's the rain. We'll be right back.
I'm Brad Phillips from Yazoo City, Mississippi. It's an honor to be named Mississippi's Catfish Farmer of the Year. I work hard to maintain the highest quality from my pond to your plate. U.S. catfish is 100% American and 100% certified by the USDA. In fact, U.S. catfish is the first seafood to meet those strict standards. So always look for the U.S. farm-raised catfish seal and find recipes and restaurants at uscatfish.com.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional, because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of
The best made.
I was sitting there selling turnips on a flatbed truck.
crunching on a pork rind when she pulled up. She had to be thinking this is where rednecks come from. She had Hollywood written
on her license plate. You know it's true. She was lost. You know what happened? You know what? Seasonal music is just not the same thing on a garden show as it is on other programs.
It is not.
Thank you, Lance. Welcome in. Peaches is here, y'all. Mark Patrick's here. He's going to help me talk more intelligently about the event that we're at this afternoon.
Exactly.
I came in. I said, we're going to be at Renaissance somewhere in Ridgeland and by the clock tower. Is that what I'm hearing?
By the clock
tower.
Okay,
good. See, I haven't seen the map. I haven't. I'm just following in your wake.
I will be there. Well, we will be there from 10 to 3. You may be a tad bit late.
Yeah, I can't, vaporize, but I'll be there shortly after 10.
Luckily, you know, being a sidekick, I can pop in and out when I want.
Here's the deal. It's a great program that we're doing. We're doing a demonstration of planting large containers for long life in those containers. This is something people don't do because it takes a lot of weight. It takes a lot of plants. It takes a lot of planting. And Mark's better at it than anybody else you're going to meet. Just trust me. But I'm also pretty good at it because I'm able to say, that looks great, and smile and take pictures. And I do learn something every time I look at one of your containers because you're big in the wow factor, but you're also big in the interesting from every angle. You know, you right. just have all right. those pieces that you have put together over the years, and we're going to show off today.
And I brought a few surprises to pop in there.
Oh,
big
good.
One.
Good, good, good.
We'll see.
Yeah, whiskey barrels are big.
It is big.
Now, the other one we're doing is going to be a giveaway.
Yes.
So you have to be there. And when you get there, you will get to register. Thanks to our dear friends at Lakeland Yard and Garden, we not only have this magnificent pot, but the beautiful plants that are going into it. This might be the best gift that we've given away in a long time.
I'm real excited about that pot.
me too. Let's see. Joe's got a cactus that is in bad shape. I don't know. I think, yes, you can root the pieces. That's the first thing. So his question is, what happened? I think that things got a little too crowded in that pot. And I also think because it literally has some growth that's falling out of it.
Yeah.
That usually tells me that it's pushing things up from the bottom, in this case, unless it had gotten knocked over, which it didn't. So I would take that whole section out, wouldn't you?
I would.
And root that. I think you'll be surprised how easily it will root.
Just make another
one. And then repot the rest of it so it stands up straight.
Yeah, you know, in that conversation, I repotted Mr. Joe finally.
Oh, did you? This is a night blooming series the size of my car.
It is huge.
It's not your neighbor.
No.
Okay, good.
I downsized Mr. Joe into a smaller pot.
Oh, good.
And then I discovered other plants
yeah,
I had stuck in there and forgot
it.
About.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, a little cactus I had just rested in there.
Well,
so it was
it was a great plant. It still is a great plant, it was too big to do anything with.
Yeah, and he didn't bloom this year, so I'm hoping, you know.
A little bit tighter fit.
Yeah.
You know, it's true. There are there's some plants that like tight shoes, like to
right.
be not tightly potted. And oftentimes, Night Bloom and Sirius resists kindness. If you fertilize it too much, it puts on lots of floppy growth and never quite gets to the flower production that we're looking for. So anyway, yes, we know this will root for you. And my only advice is to, when you go to root of something like a succulent that has a big base on it like this, a cactus or a succulent, anything that's holding all of its own liquid in it, I want to just nestle it in some really well-drained soil or even perlite or something like that for a little while to let it send out a couple of roots. I'm not going to stick it in water, but I want it to be in something that will support it but not overwhelm it.
You know, and my favorite trick is to use like ornamental stones or something like a Mexican beach stone. Just kind of weight it down and hold it in the
I
pot.
I love that. Just keep
it
where you want.
I mulch all my cactus with ornamental stone.
Well, and then you're not, they're in contact with the soil, but they're not buried.
Right.
And that's really what we're trying to accomplish because let's face it, you can forget. You don't want to have to move your cactus around. And so some of them are going to be outside, at least in the summer. Some of them are hardy to be, you know, in a porch and stuff. But they can get very wet.
Yes.
And that's other than the ones that we actually are native here. Cacti do not generally like wet circumstances.
What are the ones that grow up there at the stack off on the side of
that,
the – you know what I'm talking about.
That is a prickly pear that's been there since the late or the early 1990s.
That thing is a beast.
It is a beast.
It's on the actual ramp.
It's yeah.
It's growing between yeah. like, the concrete and the little stanchion concrete yeah. wall, and you can see it. And it's like a shot. You're looking over into, you know, West Texas
yes.
as you pull through there, because it's the Pearl.
It's
and
on
it's
the
really
bank
desolate it. Through there. You know,
it is on the bank of the Pearl Wait, River.
That native opuntia, that native prickly pear, is one of the joys of the Southeast. There are people who come here to see those plants.
Well, there's one on the interstate. Yeah, they, I mean, literally on the interstate,
I can understand.
Growing.
Yeah, they're tough. They're tough. Adam's needle is another one. It's a, yeah. a yucca that can take wet feet. You know, there are not that many of those. People will come here and stand there and look at it, you know.
I can't remember which one we ate when we had gone out to the far east side of Mexico, which was southwest
pear.
Texas.
Probably
but it looked like
pear.
The prickly pear.
Were they?
And they turned it into basically, they julienned it. They would dethrong
yeah, yeah.
it
yeah,
and
yeah.
then julienne it
yep.
and create it much like a julienne green bean.
Yep.
Yeah, they were about the same flavor.
Yep.
Wasn't much to it.
Nopales.
Yeah, not much, but
mm-hmm.
You'd throw pepper and hot sauce, and then they had goat fat, I think.
Of
that
course.
Because we had a big fricasseed goat, which was delicious, but I'd never eaten anything that was staring back at me and still had everything on it. It just had been, you know, hollered out. But the yucca or the prickly pear was
a very
was really
young,
interesting.
I was a very young, very impressionable woman trying to make points with some people the first time I went to a Chinese restaurant and there were eyes on the fish. I've been fishing and yeah. eating fish my whole life. I had never seen them.
Yeah.
And I literally couldn't. It's like when the goat, you know, I've been to a goat roast and yeah, the goat's head's still there.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. But it's one of those things where if we're really going to talk about farm to table, we have to talk about the whole farm to table.
The whole
I loved that when I was down there. I wish we had places like that. But you would go to this fairly nondescript type of restaurant that was just cinder blocks, four
yeah.
corners,
yeah.
and they'd have fires in each corner and swords.
Sure.
But in the back was the pasture, and they would slaughter those bulls and those cattle and use them. And there was only, you were only eating red meat. I mean, so.
Understandably.
Yeah, but
that
there was no
I mean,
other
they,
options.
This is what.
Every way they could cook it. Though.
In small communities, in places that I've been in my life, I find that there are people who really have. Somebody said farm to table to them and they laughed because, of course, that's what they did. You know,
right.
your whole survival depended upon not only eating the greens but eating the root and, you know, not only growing the cow for the milk but also having meat later, you know, and those kind of all of those pieces fit into that same puzzle. I don't know that we appreciate that as much as we might. I come from people who grew up real hard and there were things that. You know, as my mother said about certain foods, we don't have to eat that anymore. We can have something else. You know?
It's and like I think, the ultimate supply chain.
You know, it's
know,
true.
From
it's
the pasture
true.
Out the front door.
So talk to me a little bit, Mark, about – I mean, Mark wrote a really great handout. So we were having a great handout to give out today when we were there, when you come and you can register for this cool plant that he's going to plant, planter that he's going to plant. I'm helping. I'm the sous chef today. And that, to me, is a great role. But there's other stuff going on. I haven't seen the map of the demonstrations or anything like that, but
There's good speakers. There's
good weather, you know. This is at the Renaissance in Ridgeland today.
The Pollinator Mobile
will be there. It's cute.
I believe it's the Madison County Master Gardeners are going to be doing a fairy garden
demonstration.
Oh,
good. They do cute things.
Soil blocks, medicinal plants.
Mm-hmm.
See, us, of course.
Us. We are, of course.
Which we can't tell you what time we're going to be doing this, so you just have
you just
to come
have to
and
come.
Stay from 10 to 3. Dried flowers. Donna's doing
dried
flowers.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I mean, it's a panoply, and I love that
yes.
word because you, for example, you might not be interested in one thing, but there's going to be something else there you're going to be interested in. And there's good speakers, there's good, you know, good topics. Donna's going to talk about growing cut flowers. Nobody's better than her at that. So we're going to have a good time. Y'all come and be with us there. And, by the way, you folks will be picking up your Garden Mama coffee there, who have ordered it. But I had a note last night. Is there any extra? Can I get, you know, and of course, you know, my team sent her a note and said, she'll have it for you. So I've got whole beans and I've got ground coffee. And so far, the Garden Mama blend is a huge hit with folks. I'm happy to say the people at the UPS said that the packages even smell good when we mail them.
They even smell good.
I'm sure not everything does. But it's a joy for me. It's a real gift because y'all know I'm a coffee drinker from way back.
Garden Mama loves her coffee.
And this has been so cool. The tasting part was fun, too. I have never lived with a coffee roaster, and so being able to smell the coffee roasting and then taste these different blends and things that they created for me to check out, it's very exciting. I feel very honored. So I want to share it with everybody.
Yeah, when you know the mailing and the folks that do that every day compliment the smell of your package.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're good to
go,
on,
man.
You're on your way.
You're on something. On to something there.
You're absolutely on your way. What? Oh, the skunk is gone. Yay. Thanks, Kathy. Kathy and Vaughn, we've been following the tail of the skunk at Kathy's house this summer.
I've been following the tail of the possum.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I think he was back the other night. Yeah, he's hanging out at the pool with us, you know, just...
Well, smart. I mean, it's not a dumb animal.
I just pray that 30-pound schnauzer never gets a hold of him.
Well, I don't want to watch that. Yeah, I don't want to watch that.
It would not be good.
But good news is the skunk is gone. And what is the best carrot to sow in Zone 8, and can I plant now? Yes, you can plant now. You're looking for a variety that is – the carrot itself is smaller than your hand. So, for example, Scarlet Nance, N-A-N-T-E-S, is brilliant. It's beautiful. It's delicious, and it will grow in our soils. Chantenay is another one. I'm sure there's more, but those are the two that I just happen to like. I did see probably Johnny's seed catalog, a selection of colorful carrots that were all short.
Yes.
And I thought, that's pretty tempting, too. So check out Johnny's Select Seed. They're from Maine, and you may be, why would I buy seeds from Maine? Well, because they have a very short growing season. They specialize in varieties that we can get in from September before December, you know, before Christmas at least, sometimes a little bit longer, but they specialize in that. And it also gives us the opportunity to plant things in January and February and get them out before the heat comes because they have really focused on that particular kind of seed. And it's a beautiful place, too, if you ever get a chance.
I will say, if you are a carrot lover and you have never given that a try, it is so rewarding. It's almost like growing potatoes. It's actually better than growing potatoes because when you go to dig, it's just – amazing.
Yeah, fun exactly. Stuff. Just beautiful. Fun to do and really nothing else much like it. Let's see. Greg says, trace minerals for root vegetables. Azomite comes up as a trace mineral. Is that something we can amend our soil for the carrots and the root vegetables? I don't think you have to go that far. I think you're going to find blended trace, as used to be the name of a product. I haven't used it in so long. They mean, you know, things do change. But you might. I would see what it provides. If it provides all 12 or 13 that you're looking for, then yeah. But I don't know. I like the bottle that says trace element and has all of it on there. Oh my goodness. Let's see. What's Andrea doing today? It's Andrea. Any guess as to when the demonstration? Does Mark have any guess as to when the demonstration is going to happen? I would say not before 11 because I won't be there before 11.
It will be between 10 and 3.
That's all we can tell you. Yeah. Honestly, there.
Hey, that's how you leave a little suspense and mystery.
I know.
Well, I did correspond with Donnie yesterday, and there's just so much going on. There's so many moving parts that, you know, we're just going to get up there and have a good time and see what happens, you know. I'm not
kind of like gardening.
Kind of like gardening all the time.
I think the speakers on my can.
I think the speakers are hooked into their time frames, but those of us who are demonstrating are just going to be out there basically having a party and enjoying ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you like to hang out with a bunch of, I mean,
really smart gardeners.
Horticulturist and smart gardener. Not every, but a lot of them in the Jackson area are going to be there
and
today.
Beyond. Yeah,
it's going to be like a family.
Yeah, thank
reunion.
You, because I can't make it. You just covered me there when you said not every,
right?
Expert
right.
gardener
Lance will not.
Yeah,
be
I
there.
Will not be able to be there, but yeah. All the there. Others will be.
He'll be there in spirit.
That's right. That's right. The You know, I hate to start talking about who's there because I don't know who. So there's always people that can't make it at the last minute to things, you know, that stuff, as we say, moving parts of an event. But Bob Bruzak is one of my very favorite speakers. If you're into native plants, you need to know him anyway, whether it's right now or whether it's you know, if you can't get there today, just look him up. He's Mississippi State University. He's a former curator at Crosby Arboretum, and he's smart, funny, brilliant artist, and knows native plants like nobody. So that's my recommendation for the top of the chart for me today. Time is tight. This is Booker T. We're going to boogie on out of here, but we'll be right back. Stick around.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
When you're searching for the perfect piece of recreational property, we hope you think of Mississippi Land Bank. For generations, we've helped people finance the land in North Mississippi that they've always dreamed of owning, whether for hunting or fishing or just to get away. We mean it when we say we're here for you every step of the way, because our lenders are landowners, hunters, and fishermen, too. Visit us today at mslandbank.com. That's mslandbank.com.
Tired of the office grind?
Lucky he doesn't put the camera on in there during this show. Welcome back to the Garden Mama Show. Mark has departed to go and set us all up. Peaches and I will be this afternoon doing this great demonstration. Y'all need to come see us. It's going to be fun. It's a good event at the Renaissance in Ridgeland, Mississippi. You got time to get there from just about wherever you are because it doesn't start until 10, and we'll be there until 3. So come and join us for some good gardening, some smart people, and really just a whole lot of fun. It's a great opportunity, really. Fall gardening is, we've had events that we enjoyed for years, and things are kind of different now, so I'm really happy that this is something that's new and inviting all of us to come in. And yes, I got a haircut for the person that just texted me and said, did you get a haircut? Yes, I did. I got all.
You got it done. Was it yesterday? Or?
Yes, yeah, it was yesterday.
It's fresh.
It is. It's very, very fresh. I appreciate that. For somebody who doesn't really like to even think about all that stuff, much less take hints and whatnot, yes, I did get my hair cut yesterday.
Was this a you wanting a haircut, or was
yes,
Claire
this,
like, Mom,
no,
it's time?
No. Okay. This is me needing a haircut. This is the hair folly. There's
when it gets in your eyes out
yeah,
there yet.
Yeah, when the bangs are down and catching your glasses, it's time
well,
to Well,
there's
something.
Great humidity there to make sure that your hair is always having an interesting day in New Orleans. Has it reacted well to the new climate?
It's wet enough that it's happy. Yes.
My
old understanding, and when I moved here, people originally, you know, in the 90s, people said, well, you know, Mississippi, that part of Mississippi is always either 5 degrees colder or 5 degrees hotter than coastal Mississippi or coastal Louisiana. Yeah, it is. So
yeah, I do the weather every day, you know, and I can tell you the coastal temps have been almost like in your face. They've been so nice compared to, you know, like,
pleasant.
Hey, look at what we have here.
That's right.
And it makes you wonder about all the plants,
because
too, right?
Some of the other times of the year, it's not so great, you know.
Well, but you have the hurricanes and stuff. I guess you got to live with some of the negatives to have such a wonderful setting and an amazing the sunrises and sets that we get sent. And it's always fun to do the early show because people wake up and heading to work, and they'll,
send you pictures.
Oh, you're like, man, that's amazing. Yeah. I see some of that a little coming across the res every day.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like having that vast expanse of the Gulf of America out there.
There are
Mississippi Sound.
There are pictures that I have taken on the Mississippi Sound that I still put up on my computer. I mean, it's been years, but they're just so
classic. The
colors
are different.
And so it's just a different, yes, it's a different hue, a different world, that's for sure.
And the plants.
Ray and Clinton. Yeah. Some of my plants have gotten really big.
I know. I saw the pictures. I was like, what have you been doing?
Nothing.
Lordy.
Just 100%.
Oh, girl, I thought you were over-fertilizing, but it's just that juice in the zone.
And that's really what gardening's all about, is finding, I think that's my computer, deciding it's going to die on us. I don't know. See, it's
that same thing
my
in the
morning.
Middle of the show last night. You know, mine was like, it needs a better plug. This is a low voltage plug. I'm like, well, we've got 30 minutes left. We're working with this.
This is a good one, and I don't know the answer to it. So Garden Mama knows everything. No, I don't. But I can find this out. Our dear friend Ray in Clinton. Ray says, we had our neighborhood association meeting in our house the other night, and one of the neighbors was asking me about our ginger plant. Can you eat the rhizomes of this ginger that we have in the flower bed? And it's taken off and looks like something from the Little Shop of Horrors. It's huge. I'm sure it has, because that's a beautiful bed. I know the bed, but I don't know which one of the gingers is there. I will ask Mark, and we will tell you, because I'll ask him this afternoon, and we'll send you a note. But how do I say this? I had a friend who grew edible flowers for years and years, and he said, you know, a lot more of them are edible than you actually want to eat. You know? So probably the gingers are more, some of them are more edible, but the cultivated ginger does have a better taste and a better form to harvest. And I just don't know which one's in the flower bed. I believe y'all have a thing called butterfly ginger, and that's not the same thing. But I'll find out. Mark's been there more recently than I have. Okay.
And for us neophytes out there, the rhizome is the root, correct?
The rhizome is that thing that stores all the water, all of the nutrients, and frankly, in the case of ginger, all that spicy flavor.
Every bit of it's right there.
It's all right there, yeah. The flowers don't smell like it.
Yeah, what do you do with the top, the growth? Is it just basically for show?
I think if you're farming, yes, I mean, the intent of it is for it to get pollinated so that then the plant can itself.
Okay.
But I think if you're growing it for harvesting the edible ginger, you probably compost that part.
Well, and, it reminds me.
Cut flowers.
Last time I was at deer camp last weekend, I opened up the refrigerator and I'd left, I'd probably 4 or 5 potatoes in the crisper for 6 months.
Potatoes?
Yeah, I was going to let you know. I have a beautiful potato crop. Now, is there any value to this?
Yeah, plant them.
Okay, I can.
You can plant them, yeah.
Is this a time?
Well,
I thought we were
a month ago
late.
Would have been better, but since yours are already sprouted.
I thought we were late, but I can plant these. I can just pull them out.
Yeah, we grow a fall crop and we grow a spring crop.
Uh-huh. Okay, and the best way to plant potatoes, which I've never done, is similar to you're just basically burying them.
Since yours are already sprouted, mm-hmm. ordinarily we would put them about 4 inches under, and then
it would push through.
It would push through, and you would start filling in around it because the potatoes, of course, form along the stem.
Okay.
In the container.
So you want to add dirt.
So you're going to add
it,
as it grows.
Gotcha.
But because yours have already sprouted, they need a little bit more room for their roots underneath.
6-8 inches
maybe
instead of 4.
Right. Yeah. And then when they sprout, you fill in.
Any specific type of dirt or soil or
something that drains well. If you have a bag of potting soil, I'd mix it with maybe some ground bark or something like that. You just want it to drain well because, again, as we get into winter, it can be very wet.
And they get wet and nasty.
And they'll just rot.
Right.
So you don't want that.
So they get wet feet, too.
They certainly can.
The wet body.
Their entire self can discorporate necessary.
Turn into mush.
If you've ever seen somebody go try to dig up their caladiums after they're not there anymore, and they said, well, they just disappeared.
Yeah, just went to
they
nothing.
Did disappear. They literally melted into the soil around them, and you lose them. If they get frozen or if they get so wet that they stay wet in cold soil for, say, a week, they'll just rot. There's nothing there.
Well, thank you. I've been wondering that since last Sunday. I was like, I might need to ask GM about this one because I think I got a harvest here coming.
Interestingly enough, in another moment of synchronicity, there are two potatoes that have sprouted sitting at my house that I've got to do something about. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, these things look kind of alien. That's why when you said that earlier about the – You know, this one looked kind of alien. This thing has arms coming off everywhere, and there's about five potatoes, so it looks like something's really trying to get out. And I was like, whoa, what is that?
You have to let them out of there.
And then
you
I was like, no, that's my taters.
This is interesting. This is a friend took this picture in, where did they say, outside Cleveland, Ohio. And I've never seen a red maple do this. Any idea if that's what it is? Well, actually, no, because I can't see the leaves close enough to tell you for sure. It looks more like a pear, and pears do color up red, but so do maples. If what you're asking about is the variety of coloring in it, for people that aren't going to want to hear this, but when one of the reasons that we love seasonal changes is because things change. But when it's not changed yet and then things warm back up again, or we have a little bit less rain, more rain, things are just different, the trees don't dissolve into their deciduous selves nearly as quickly. And you may just be seeing color up in a slower fashion because the trees, the weather may have warmed up after it started its process. What happens, of course, in that whole business why trees drop their leaves is because they've transferred all of their nutrients into the stems and then into the trunk and then into the roots of the plant to keep it alive. So that's what's going on here. I'm going to try and crawl up in the computer and see if I can get one leaf to show me what it actually looks like up close, and I'll see if I can tell you, Mark. Thank you for the picture. Stick around. We got another hour to go here on the Garden Mama Show.
Don't cry, baby. Look at where you've been. Everybody knows. On your knees, carry on, carry on. Your head is full of doubt, you can't see it out. Carry on.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Propane uses for residential include cooking, heating, gas logs, outdoor products, water heaters, landscaping, and manufactured housing. Propane is a trusted, reliable source of energy that is used year-round by more than 60 million Americans. Visit propane.com to learn more. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's propane.com.
I feel more Buick
heirloom, but they're just not in the trade. It's probably true of possum grapes. That's probably what how you would find them is through those really very, very local sources. I always encourage you to check out the Mississippi Market Bulletin put out by the Department of Agriculture because it has listings in it that are intended to be very local, and they're oftentimes things that you don't hear about anyplace else. So check that out for those varieties, too. But that's wonderful. I think everybody ought to grow a grape or two if they can. And certainly when you're in Pontotoc, you certainly should grow some grapes.
It's kind of like I think you're supposed to.
I think it's one
when
of
the
those.
County's named after that.
It's just one of those pieces
of the puzzle.
It is
a wealth of great stuff, too, because you have some of the Amish community there, and, mm-hmm. and they have some very interesting products, great stuff, all farm-to-table
stuff. Oh, absolutely. The pickles, oh, my goodness. Wonderful things. Wonderful things. That's one of the reasons I was talking about festivals that we used to have and that we miss. That's one of those. The sweet potato sweets is another thing that you don't run into unless you go to them or go to their website or something like that. But we used to be able to see them at events. A lot of things changed during the pandemic, and some things have come back, but in different forms. And I'm always going to tell you, just like the study from Spain told us today, keep the memories, tell those stories, but make some new ones, make new adventures. We're going to go out on a new adventure today and tell old stories. So, both going on. I'm telling you, the planting a container is not as simple as it sounds. And you know, he's not here, so I'll talk even nicer about Mark. He's not listening right now. I grew up growing one plant in one pot, and it's very hard to change. It also makes planting flower beds difficult because you're looking at the one plant rather than at the whole vignette. And when you're looking at containers, you have to think in other ways. I'll give you one of the tips that he's going to share this afternoon. If you have a container and your container's 14 inches tall, your tallest plant needs to be no more than two-thirds that height above the container, both because of the amount of roots that it takes, but also because of the proportion. Now, if you put that big, tall plant in a little bitty container, it's always going to look like it's going to tip over, even if it doesn't. It's not comfortable to look at. And on the other hand, if you put a little bitty plant in a great big pot, it's probably going to spend a lot of time growing roots, which you're not going to see. So give yourself that balance and make sure that it is actually working for you. I think y'all are going to really appreciate this. He's smart, and it's going to be a real good thing to do. You, sir, Mr. Lance, you sent me down a rabbit hole last week, and you don't even know it because I haven't mentioned it. Pumpkins.
Oh, yeah.
Good grief. I have gone deep into the pumpkin world. I know more now than I did before. And
good, because you
asked some good questions. And, yeah, I know they're South American, but did they go with tomatoes or did they go before? They went before. But guess what? When I was in horticulture school, I had somebody who was actually told that pepitos was not real, that people didn't eat roasted pumpkin seeds, that just wasn't. She said, well, we roast the squash and we roast the pumpkin and we do all this, and she's Native American, this is what we do. And the teacher didn't believe it till she brought him some that were actually in a package from a store. You know, he said, sure, you can do that.
You can find them at the
pepitos is a real thing. And in learning about pumpkins this week, I learned that was what they ate. They didn't eat the flesh. They ate the pepitos, they ate the seeds, and they used the hull, the husk, that hard part, as a dipper, or, you know, to either ladle water or to dip things up, they used it as a tool. So as many things happen, we come along into the invasion of the world, you know, and suddenly everybody's looking at pumpkins, and somebody decided to start eating them. That's when they said, you know, these are not that great. You know, the original calabaza was not that tasty. So it had ritualistic significance. It was deeply cultural significant. But the things like, for example, if you had told me, I would never have known that there's supposed to be pumpkin seeds in mole. I now know that.
I don't know what all goes in mole, but you can put a lot of stuff in there.
And it does make sense because it's a very earthy taste. And that's why people put chocolate in mole, because they're trying to get that level of umami in there, I think. But the farmers there in Mesoamerica, in Central and South America, of course, planted they were the first to cultivate pumpkins. They would do just like what everybody that ever breeds anything does. They said, well, I like that gourd over there. I'm going to grow those seeds. I'm not going to grow them from this one over here. It didn't get big enough and I didn't like it, you know, so I'm going to grow the one I liked. And that's how they began to do that. That's how we domesticated the pumpkin. But oh my goodness. They took them to Europe and the whole thing went crazy.
Well, of course it did. They're
like everything else. By the way, Connecticut Field, if you want the original American, Native American favorite pumpkin, you need to try to grow Connecticut Field. Connecticut Field is one that they developed in our country here for the large size and the, you know, orange color and all that stuff. But it's not easy to grow. So just let me know how you do with it. They can be very big, but they're not that easy to grow. Now, on the other hand, apparently, since my ancestors in Ireland and places like that were already carving turnips into faces, they really got into the pumpkins, and that's where all of that started. It all apparently this is so funny that when they came here, they ended up taking them back to Ireland because they loved all of that carving and the space that they could give it. Okay, so that's how we ended up with all these pumpkins. We went from Central and South America to Europe and back again and then back again. And now, of course, we grow pumpkins all over the place. Jack-o'-lantern actually comes from a ghoulish Irish thing, which is thus the carved pumpkins and whatnot. Oh, goodness, that's so funny. That tickles me. I have to say, though, because I always want to I don't want to leave out, you know, my Celts. That's another All Saints Day at the end of October, of course. It goes into it, and then Samhain, which is Welsh, or Samhain, which is how I think it's pronounced. That is another one, the night when the creatures and the souls walk the earth, and so you have to give them stuff, and in this case, like light pumpkins, you know, put candles in pumpkins and whatnot. The idea is we're
just kind of bribery.
Going to ward off the spirits, ward off the, you know, there's so many things we want to ward off evil spirits. I really, the Jack of the Lantern is how that all, you know, so it becomes Jack-o'-lantern. But Johnny Seed wants you to know that pumpkin breeding is going on today at a faster rate, and probably in the 2000s at the very least, this last 20 so years have been the biggest, fastest explosion. That's why when you go to look at pumpkins, there's blue pumpkins and white pumpkins and pink pumpkins and every color pumpkin that you can possibly imagine. Some of those will grow well in the deep south. Some of them, it's just too hot in the summer and they grow too fast and blow up. Some other ones actually end up having too much ripening. They ripen too quickly, and so they don't create much on the inside except seed. So it's different. Different pumpkins do better in different places. But I like the orange carver pumpkins. They certainly don't ever grow out of style. But I love Igor. This is the newest, it's not new, but new this century. Johnny Seeds has it. It's one that is tall with dark orange skin and is particularly, because it's shaped so funny, it looks like it has shoulders, and they've intended that because it looks like such a mean and serious creature. I do love that. Pumpkins are fun. We know more about them now than we did. There are so many varieties. I started to go down that list, and I said, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to talk about how fun this is and how much we've enjoyed pumpkins and how we've actually – it's another example of the plants that come from the one hemisphere, go to the other hemisphere, get improved, come back to the original hemisphere, get improved again, and the next thing you know, we've all got pumpkins. It's a really fun thing. I love that. Let's see. Joe has another question. Let's see if this is the cactus or the other one. Can I use rooting hormone on the cactus tips and round part when rooting? Yes, absolutely. You can dip, or you can make a solution and water them in with it. Whichever kind of product you have just depends on which one you choose to use. Well, yes, sir.
We have Fletcher from Grenada, and he had a question kind of circling back to the magnolia question or topic, and he had only heard the end of it but wanted to expand upon that.
Okay, sure. Hey, Fletcher, welcome in. What's going on today?
Good morning, Garden Mom, and I look forward to traveling on Saturday mornings just so I can listen to you.
Thank you so much.
But my question is, I heard the tail end when you mentioned Little Jim. I was looking at that tree a couple of years ago. So now I'm trying to put some kind of screening options in play on my side yard. But I've been looking at the Green Giant or the Junior Green Giant. A lot of people are not familiar with the Junior Green Giant. But I also thought about the Little Jim. And I was just wondering, without seeing my property, what your thoughts were.
Okay. For folks that don't know, when he's talking about the Thuja, the T-H-U-G-A, there is a miniature one, a small one. It's not small. It's just that if you've ever seen arborvitae in a cemetery, that's how big Thuja can get. So this is just a smaller version of that. You have to turn your radio off. Because I can't hear myself talk. I can't think. I can barely think anyway, but I can't think. Anyway, so I think Little Jim is a really good choice, but the smaller version of that, the basic arborvitae, the Thuja, is a great choice too. I'll tell you that they're going to be very different in their presentation and in their texture, because the Thuja is going to just be this big green wall. There's a lot to be said for that. It not only blocks wind and sun and things like that, but it's also very pretty. The textures in that plant are gorgeous. On the other hand, the Little Jim is going to grow a bit more slowly, but it's going to have flowers and bright, shiny evergreen leaves. So you'll have to kind of weigh which one is a better choice for you. But I think they both have potential in that setting that you describe.
So you said the Green Giant is going to be, I'm saying, what, 30, 40 feet?
Yeah, the big one is. It's not as big as if you planted the traditional magnolia, it would be bigger. But the Green Giant is a big plant.
Okay. So is it, and there's a smaller plant called the Junior Green Giant?
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably going to be 20.
About 20 feet?
Mm-hmm. I would think. I think it would be the same height as the Little Gem.
Okay.
Ultimately.
All right. I appreciate it.
Now, you'll call me back in 5 years and tell me, well, they all got to be 40 feet tall. And I'll go, uh-huh. That's because you're a good grower.
Let's build a treehouse,
you know.
The Little Gem magnolia is going to be grow extremely slow.
They're slower than your Thuja would be. They're slower than, but they're not that slow. That was one of the reasons that I took the picture today. They planted those things. They probably already put on several inches and bloomed this summer. So it's not an unproductive tree. It just doesn't grow as fast as a few other things.
Sure.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, Fletcher. Appreciate you. Say hey to everybody in Grenada for me. Let's see now.
I'm a big Grenada football fan. Their number one running back for a couple of years, a name of Caleb Taylor, he ended up signing with Ole Miss recently. Ooh, I can't wait for him to get loose on y'all's Tigers one day. But no, I love Grenada. They've been very strong, and what a beautiful area! The rolling hills.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful spot up there.
Sweet people and gorgeous country.
Well, you're juxtaposed there when you get up into the higher hills, mm-hmm. and start down mm-hmm. to the prairies, and you get over to the flatlands.
Well, and that's
and
the thing,
right
you're,
there, everything.
You're really in the crow's nest, because it's all from right there. It's just literally not that far. The foot of the Appalachians, as well as getting into. Quite frankly, there's not that many prairies left, but we got them here, So we lucky. We have a chance to appreciate and enjoy things. When is the best time to plant grapes? I would have to tell you when they're available. If you had a choice, you'd probably want to plant in January, February. But if you can run into the plants this fall, I got no problem with that. You might have to protect them a little bit or grow them in a container until you're ready to transplant them. But they're going to be hardy. As long as you've got a few weeks for them to be able to put out some roots before really cold weather sets in on you, you'll be fine in the fall. Otherwise, go for early spring. But if you can get the plants, get them. You can protect the plants in a container and have them ready to go. I don't think they're going to be that easy to find. So see what you can do on that end of things. I think that's a good idea. This is a good question, and it is the subject of an entire social media group that I'm part of, and people argue about it all the time. I love gardeners. We all are just so sure, What is the best way to root mother-in-law's tongue? Water rooting hasn't worked.
Well, some of these plants' names, man, they are really not fond of the mother-in-law.
You want to know the other name of it? The other name of it is snake plant.
Oh, wow. So,
as a proud mother-in-law myself.
Yeah. You're a gardener and a mother-in-law, and you're not – you see what I'm saying?
There's I understand.
Yeah, that are like, what?
The first time that anybody ever walked, I walked into a place and there was a tub full of those big, tall, the Sansevieria mother-in-law's tongues, things about 4 feet tall. And someone said, I just happened to be there. And somebody said, what is that plant? And somebody else said mother-in-law's tongue. Somebody else said snake plant. And the person who had asked the question said, well, don't like her very much, do you?
Yeah. I'm thinking like.
No, that's the name of the plant.
Right, yeah. I'm thinking that somebody could have come up with one of those for like the Venus flytrap. I mean,
there
like,
probably
why did they
is.
Give it
we
that
just
name?
Probably
yeah,
can't say it on
yeah,
the
you
air.
Can't say it on the air. You actually know the answer, apparently.
This is a family broadcast. Yeah. You have to be very careful with these things. Water rooting is not great for me from my point of view. The argument in this site tends to be over whether you have to have something like perlite, that doesn't have any soil in it at all, or whether you can root some things in a little bit of soil. If I had some good sand and some good soil, I think it would, because the problem with perlite is you put that leaf in there and it falls over, because you don't want to stick it in there more than about an inch deep, and even if it's only a 4-inch cutting, 4-inch leaf top tip, it's still likely to collapse. So if I had some good sand and a good potting mix, I would mix those together, more sand than potting mix, that would give it stability. I would certainly do it in a small container and take a mason jar or some such thing as that as glass and put over the top of it just to raise the humidity around the plant. Okay, I hope that'll help. Joe's busy today. He's doing everything. He's one of the subscribers to my newsletter. It's getting to be that time again, so y'all need to be thinking about that. We'll be talking about it next month. But it's gotten some good reviews from folks that didn't read it before, and nobody has really disliked format change except one or two people, and okay, that's all.
That happens. It's like, you know,
I realize you can't please everybody with your work all the time.
You got to try to keep it fresh too, and that. And I love the way it looks. I'm personally think it's a wonderful tool. So anybody that hasn't subscribed,
Check it out. Send
that big money.
That's right. MamaOnAir@yahoo.com. We'll talk more about it next month because my subscriptions start in January. So if you're interested in it, send me an email. I'll send you some that you can preview and check it out. Okay. And, yeah, I still want to talk about herbal vinegar. I hope I'm going to get to that today. And I may not because today is dance day. And I think we need to go dancing. We're going to get out of here because I'm crazy and I'm your mama. And we'll be right back.
Ain't hiding out, I know that's true. Pretty mama, sure need you. Pretty mama, where you been so long?
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae.
Friday night's just got a...
You want to dance in music,
I'm telling you. You should see my feet. It's a good one. You know, the enthusiasm of dancing is that today is International Dance Day. And I've always said I think you should dance in the garden because, first of all, nobody's looking. So, you know, they won't say anything to you. But if they do, it's because they are appreciating that you're so enthusiastic, I think. But it is an important thing to remember. Just like you got to think about what happened and about what you're doing now, you got to keep your brain going. It helps if you keep the rest of you moving around a little bit, too. Get up, get going, get moving. You don't have to go far. As the researchers get older, we find out that you don't actually have to jog 10 miles every 3 days. Just keep yourself in fairly decent health. But you do have to move at least a little bit. What is the 3-2-1 rule for pickles? Anybody know? Well, it's really this simple. 3 parts of vinegar, 2 parts of water, and 1 part of sugar. If you got something and you want to pickle it, it can be brand new, happy, fresh, lovely. It can be an old onion. It can be celery. It can be anything you want to pickle. I'm particularly fond of just this is called quickling. Quick pickling. But I don't have time for all that other stuff. Let's make some kimchi. I got 6 months. But I can make a quick pickle and serve it to you tomorrow. So this is what I'm really excited about is the 3-2-1 rule. I really thought my mother made it up, but it turns out it's an actual thing. The 3-2-1 rule generally tells you you should use classic white vinegar, preferably distilled vinegar if you can get hold of that. 3 parts of that. 2 parts of water, good water. You know, if you have good water, that's even better. And 1 part of sugar. So if you're using 3 cups and 2 cups and 1 cup, that's how much you're making. But you might also be cutting that in half. You don't have to make a whole bucket of this stuff at a time in order to pickle a few red onions and radishes and things like that. It's a quick, easy way to go. It's a way to put things to use in a way you hadn't done before, as is herbal vinegars. I'm such a vinegar nut. It's not that I don't love oils. I do. But vinegars, there's just a whole panoply. And it's my word for today. If you don't know panoply, I should probably explain it to you, but I won't. You can hear from the inference what it's about. It's a whole bunch of them, but they have to be related to one another. You don't have a panoply that's not.
It's kind of like the monarchies of Europe.
Could be.
A lot of them. Lot of relations.
Fairly
in there.
Related. Yeah. Sometimes too related.
Too much so sometimes. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm an American. Yeah, but. I had grandparents who were a whole lot more anti-monarch than I ever could imagine being, and I hear them in my head sometimes. Why do you think we came over here and lived in the mud? Why do you think we did this or did that? Well, I guess that's because this is a land of opportunity. That's why. That's what we're so lucky. We're so lucky. My whole question, though, about what I'm going to do with all this stuff. You know, John wants to know, without vinegar, you know, that's pretty tough. It's very difficult to pickle without vinegar. I don't know the answer to that, but if somebody has it, they should tell me. I recognize that there are other things people put into it. It's just not this pickle. There's other pickle things, but I don't happen to do that. Somebody will tell us. Somebody will send us an email. Madison County, is it too late? The Business League folks, they're busy. Is it too late to separate iris bulbs? No, particularly if you get busy right now. If it's done, here's the other thing, though. If you take your shovel to dig up the clump and it's really, really dusty because it hasn't rained at your particular location for a period of time, water those plants and then go back and dig them up the next day. Here's why. You're trying not to damage the roots as you separate them, and in many cases, iris roots are very knotted together. It's like anything else. You got to untangle the tangle, and when you do that, then you can get a better result when you do the transplanting because they're already slightly better hydrated. Okay. I'll tell you the truth. I am I'm an herbal vinegar fan. And I got this way because one year, literally the pickling and the herbal vinegaring go together for me because it's all kind of vinegar-based activities. I had a whole lot of okra, and I made pickled okra, and it was the best I ever ate because I'm not a big pickled okra fan. So I really liked it a whole lot the way I was able to get it to go. And that led me to, well, what else can I put in here? So one of the things you put in pickled okra is a single Tabasco pepper, whole pepper. You put in a quart jar, you put in a half a teaspoon of mustard seeds. And before you know it, you've made a pickled okra that is really tasty and very exciting to eat. But you're also about halfway to pickled to vinegar with herbs in it. So I really do like white vinegar for this, but I have used others. I have used rice vinegars. I have used other vinegars, and I like all of them. They're just a little bit different. What you're basically doing is two sprigs of herb or so. You know, you got a big chunk of parsley, and that's going to take about a cup of vinegar. So when we fill jars or pretty bottles, excuse me, one of the prettiest things is purple basil. And if you put that in there and then you come in with your vinegar on top of that, the whole thing turns pink with purple in it, and it's a spectacular gift. You want to eat it, but you also want to give it to somebody because it's so lovely. I'm in favor of, in the same way that I would do for the pickles, I'm in favor of one pepper of some sort. I'm in favor of some mustard seed. I'm in favor of peppercorns. I don't want to put anything that's ground up. I want, you know, if you want to go another direction, you might want to put in two cloves of garlic and a star anise, okay, in this herbal vinegar. But the idea is that you need to put in things that are whole, that aren't going to try to mix into the vinegar itself in the way that a powdered herb would do, because that's not tasty and it won't set up correctly. It's not that difficult to do. There's arguments. You can find recipes for using hot vinegar, which is what I prefer, but you can find other recipes that say you don't really have to do that. I'm really never thought it was artisanal. I never thought I was doing anything, but apparently my recipes fall into that because I do make them and seal them tightly, and therefore the shelf life is about 6 months. Otherwise, you need to use them much more quickly than that. If you open them up, you can refrigerate them again for about 6 months. After you've made the vinegar, though, I find it's real helpful to just put it in the back of the cabinet for at least a couple of weeks and let it just set. You know, not, you don't want it in the sunlight. You don't want all those things to change it. But you give it an opportunity to just age and mesh together. Yes, for example, I will take it and turn it a couple of times just to make sure everything is well agitated in there. But when you go to use the vinegar, you're going to use only the vinegar part. So if you are going to use the whole thing, you may want to strain out the other ingredients that you have put in there. I don't know if you, can imagine this, but I'm interested in apple cider vinegar for this purpose, simply because you can put more peppers in it without overwhelming the vinegar with pepper. So you can make a really, really spicy herb vinegar, for example, with rosemary, which is so strong, Thai basil, which is so bright and strong. You know, and you can just do these things, but you have to make your decision about, because you're going to lose some of them. Some things you won't ever taste again. That's why you have to do some of them and try a few things. It's a good idea. Apple cider is a great replacement. All righty. Thank you very much. I use mustard seed, black peppercorn, basil, one habanero, and white peppercorns. Wonder if we could put pink peppercorns in there. Would it turn it pink? I'm thinking now. And white vinegar and water. Yes, that's right. You use 2/3 vinegar and 1/3 water for whatever the mix is that you're doing. And sometimes I put in a dill sprig. And I can understand why it's only sometimes, because sometimes dill is so aromatic and so strong that as soon as you smell it, you realize if you put it in there, you're not going to smell anything else. So you do have to kind of let yourself get used to what you like doing. Some people put lemon in these. I don't particularly care for that, but if you're making a vinaigrette, I can see where that would be a good idea. I can understand why somebody would do that. Sue in Loosedale, my grandmother's hometown. Beautiful pot of caladiums, a dozen more bulbs in the pot. Ooh, it sure is a busy one, isn't it? Okay, what's the best way to separate them to allow them to dry out over the winter and you eventually will plant them in the yard next year? That makes great sense. This is a good way to get caladiums because they'll be, as these are, in a basket. There's lots of bulbs in there and lots of leaves still. What you want to do, I'm going to take that container and turn it on its side. And in about a week, those leaves will shrivel up. And at that point, all you have to do is take the whole clump out of the container. And basically with gloved hands, I don't want you to use water to rinse these or separate them. I want you to keep them dry. So use gloved hands and just separate them. The bulbs will come apart. And when you store them, the biggest thing about storing caladium bulbs is that they need to not be encouraged to rot. So you want to store them so that they don't touch each other. You can do this, for example, people used to use pantyhose. They use mesh onion bags. They use all sorts of things. But the idea is that you put them in something that's going to be in your garage, up on a shelf, not in the sun, not in the cold, not in the heat particularly, and it's just going to let them sit there through the winter. If you have different situations, sometimes people will put them in a drawer because they can't keep the sunlight out. That's fine. That's just great. You know, no problem with that. But it's also important to realize that if they touch each other, this is why you have to go in and check on them a couple of times during the winter. Caladium bulbs and other bulbs that we store can sometimes mess up each other. One of them will have a little dot of fungus on it and it'll get on the next one. If it touches the next one, you can lose the whole plate full, the whole box full. So be careful of that. That's the main thing. Another piece on this, you can add a teaspoon of sugar to the herbal vinegars too. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That is still such a beautiful picture. Anyway, I'm looking at old things now. See, we go back. That's the other one. One of these days, we're going to just read random texts from all the shows and all the people. Nobody will know who it was. It's just random because it's such, y'all say such great things. The other's going to be photos. Unattributed, on a loop, just put them on all the time.
I got so many great photos.
There's some beautiful things.
I'm glad I'm a good filer on the computer. Because
I am too, because I am not. I can spend days looking for a photograph only in my stuff.
When Will first and I started working together, and he was giving me instructions on, hey, these are the programs.
He's our
and
boss,
things. Yeah, do you know, put these somewhere where you can find them. And I started filing stuff on the computer, and he was looking at it. He goes, "What in the world? How are you?
What does all this mean?"
I was like, "Hey, man, I was in finance forever. I had to keep up with so much stuff. I'm an expert when it comes to finding what I'm looking for.
Databases.
Man, I'll take an extra 5 minutes to never have a file floating somewhere. It's always going to be where it's supposed to be, or I'm going to be mad at myself."
There are people that would pay for that service, you realize.
You would grow old quickly
dealing with other people's stuff. This is the truth, y'all. When digital photography really became a big deal at the end of the last century, my first digital camera came to me from the folks at National Gardening, because they were going from being a print magazine to being online only. So for 14 years, I wrote two columns a week for the online publication. And the way they started us was to send each, because we were all slide photographers. We've been dragging tripods, around the world and stuff. So they sent us a digital camera, which now is, it was best on the line at the time. This now, of course, is, you would get it as a bonus, like a toaster for opening a bank account. But it was a good camera at the time. Still had some of the best software that I wish I could use. I can't use it anymore because it didn't upgrade.
Won't jive up.
But no, it didn't. It didn't make its way into the modern, the next era. But we all just leaped in, and when that all started, there was a whole lot of, what do you do with these? Because, for years we've been making the slide. If you never took slides, they're like three-ring binders. And you have the individual slides are in these little sleeves in pages. So you could pretty clearly tell what it was. You write one label on it. It's this shoot from this day and maybe a plant that you were looking at or something like that. But then all of a sudden you didn't have to think about paying to because you'd be real careful. Slides cost money to develop. Well, suddenly we've got digital cameras. I saw a guy the other day do a riff about, do you remember when we had to pay for texting? And there was individual charges.
Well, it was each text could cost you. And if you
I'm
went
telling
over...
you, I'm one of the people that will complain about that the rest of my life because I want that money back from what my kids spent. But anyway, the whole business... The whole thing, is just so crazy sometimes. You look at that, you go in there and you think, oh, okay, well, this was about, 1998, 99. You look at it, nope, picture's not in there. Okay, well, I wrote this for this particular publication, so it's got to be in that folder, right? Nope, it's not. I went to a workshop that year in 2001. Great photographer said, okay, you got to get this thing into a system. If you don't, in 20 years, you're going to be down here going, I can't find my pictures. That's me. I can't find my picture. But I'm still glad to be here. This is Steve Winwood. In case you didn't know, stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you thinking about retirement, or are you recently retired? Do you have a plan, or do you have a drawer full of statements? If your answer is the latter, then you're not retirement planning, you're retirement hoping. Risks and inflation are rising, and planning is critical now. At Element Wealth, our exclusive 360 process can create a strategy to help protect what you've worked so hard to build while still providing growth. To start the conversation, visit myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006. 601-957-6006.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
The best.
That was our hero. He'd be making like a feline, heading for the borderline, going for broke. Saying one more hit, I'll do it. This just ain't nothing to it. One more for the road.
dancing. We can't help it.
You wanted dancing music.
I told you. You
got a great bunch of dancing music in there.
I have to say, one of the things about picking music for this show that has always been fun is that ballads are not the thing. We don't need anybody to cry or go to sleep. So I have the opportunity to bring, you know.
The Guy Clark Tomato one's one of the slowest ones, and
I love it.
It
really is.
Yes,
and
I love
it. It'll about kill you by the time the 30 seconds goes by. It's like, come on, finish, y'all. Right, get started.
But it is a good one.
Get
too.
That going. One year, and this is a true story, I love the song Autumn Leaves, and I was determined there's going to be a version of it that I can play on the radio. There's not. I listened to everybody's. I mean, for a while, if you cut a record, you had to cut Autumn Leaves, just like you had to make a Christmas album. You know, you had to do that. No Autumn Leaves. Sorry, you just have to think
about it. I need to come out
it.
With my own Christmas album. Lance sings Christmas songs.
Oh, and dear.
Just pick the winners.
Not suitable for work. I feel confident.
Yeah, you know my comedic mind, so.
I appreciate
it. More Weird Al Yankovic sings.
Just on that side.
Lance
that's
sings
right.
Weird Al Yankovic Christmas
oh,
songs.
Yeah, yeah, that see, would be we more, can do that.
Yeah,
can
I can pull that one.
I don't know if we can sell it, but we can do that.
It'll be a free download. Yeah, I'm going to have to give it away, I promise.
No, I don't think we can give it away. My mom used to holler at me for texting before the free time. I love this. I had a plan that was free calls and texts after 9 and free on the weekends, and they cost for every text before then. This person's absolutely right. The comic that I was watching said, you knew how important you were in your family if they didn't call you to tell you about a death until after the free time started, because they couldn't text you and during the day, or it would cost by the, that's what nobody realizes. That's why there's all of these. You know, if you know, you know, ta-ta for now, all of those kinds of abbreviations and emojis and all those things that got developed. Yeah. Our children are really clever. They figured this
paying
out.
Paying for a character.
Trying to, because we were, you know, they were tired of getting yelled at by all of us who were paying the phone bill. Came up with lots of them.
I always was, that was one of the great selling tools for those that finally said, hey, maybe we can grow our business by giving people free text. Man, their business just absorbed.
I mean, hello,
clients.
Punch that button.
Yeah,
you
they
know?
Were like, we're in.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
That's when they got you with the contracts for a while.
Well,
right?
That
when
happened to you.
But,
that
but again, too. Everybody's got to make money at it. But it was revolutionary
it
to
sure
not
was.
Have to deal with the per text fee or the free time or roaming and some of the best developments, in my opinion, because at least you know what your bill is.
And that's really all people want. That's what people are trying to do, I think, is to understand what it's going to cost tomorrow. You know, what I have to pay for. What did I just commit myself to? And sometimes you didn't know. But I'll tell you the truth. My very first cell phone was delivered to me on the set of My Dog Skip, delivered to me by C Spire, the company prior to C Spire, their parent.
Cellular,
but, so. Yeah. And there's never been anything but that kind of service. And that, you know, come on. There's people all over the country that try to figure out. I was surprised the first time I traveled anywhere and nobody could hook up to a different cell tower. And my little Mississippi company is hooking up to everything, you know, because they were just that good. They were that smart, even at the beginning. And they've only gotten – I mean, really, the whole system has only gotten better. I'm happy to tell you that nowadays you don't have to pay for individual texts, you know, by the character. And if you don't believe us, I'll show you my phone bills from that time because I kept a couple of them just to remind myself of how horrible it was. But if we don't improve stuff, then we, you know, I can go back another couple of decades. My grandmother wouldn't call you unless it was Sunday. And I'm not sure if the rates were lower or if she thought, I don't even know what it was, but you weren't going to hear about that, what happened on Wednesday until Sunday when she called you. And, of course, if you didn't call my mother on the weekend, she would send the police to find out what happened to you. So we had different phone strategies then, different priorities.
One of our listeners says, you brought up another memory about roaming. If I was roaming, and I assume her parents or whatever, like, if you're roaming, you might as well.
Yeah.
She said I had to use the payphone to make a call. I was the same way. I mean, I was scared to death. To try to make a call outside your range.
Well,
when I was in Mexico, you had to go use a payphone. I mean,
trust
me,
$4,000
a call.
When I went to Europe, I took the little card with me because I knew I couldn't afford my own phone. But they would issue you cards at that time that would work in the payphones there that were, you know, it allowed you to at least only burn up one card at a time to say, yes, I made it safely, and then, you know, you're gone. But it's just a funny thing. Our communication world has both expanded and collapsed into itself all at the same time, and it makes us all better able to understand things like, you need to remember your old stuff, but you got to still have new adventures or your brain won't keep working. I mean, you know, we have to have both of those parts of the puzzle. I'm absolutely confident that, in addition to being today, sorry about this, but it's also queso day, so I think I know where we're going to go eat.
You know it.
It's kind of one of those things.
Maybe you have to have a margarita too, because yesterday was Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Oh,
so,
was it?
There's so many
we can
things
practice.
To celebrate.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. You know, you think about this. This is just a real quick little piece to leave you with today, because this has been such a great morning. I always wondered about galls. We get people send us pictures like the camellia has a gall on it, or the oak leaf.
Oh,
has
you're not
galls
talking about the French.
No, and okay. I'm not talking about nerves either.
Okay.
The gall of you. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about actual physical horticultural galls, okay? There are reasons for it. There have been, I've studied them, learned them all my whole life. We just found another two parasitizing wasps that create them that we never knew existed. So for everybody who's saying, how come I'm seeing galls and I've never seen them before? This might be why. There may be more of them. Binghamton University these two species are living in the U.S., but they came to us from Europe, and they're trying to figure out how they spread. Well, of course, oak gall wasps are not in the pollinator, you know, favored group, shall we say, but they certainly benefit from our better treatment of pollinators, and that may be why there are enough of them around now to look at. But I think it's really interesting. There's 90 different species of oak gall types. But then again, there's 800 species of wasps generally that live in them. I had no idea my oak tree was such a wasp heaven. I love it. The good wasps are good. The bad wasps will sting me and make me very angry. Andrea's first sale plan was a 28-minute plan.
Well, what could you do with that today?
That's sad. Yeah. That's literally emergencies only.
It was like the old keyhole in the back, you know, the old dungeon key, basically, where you had to turn it on.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
that's
like,
kind
that's
of that
how
same
rudimentary
thing.
These
well,
things
and
were.
You had to make your own charger cable.
Yeah,
you,
saying,
you had to wind your own stuff.
You could do there was a lot of stuff you could do then. Now you can't touch the insides of them, but I had friends that actually knew how to, like, gut them and make them better and work better by going to, like, Radio Shack and redoing some stuff. Like, how did you do that? Like,
that was so much fun. The first SIM card. Look, it's a SIM card. What's a SIM card?
Did
nothing but hold on to it. I have three of them. I don't know what they went to, but they're in an envelope. Okay, what do I, you know, what phone was that? I have no idea. No idea whatsoever.
Now, I wonder what phone was the first SIM card, because that was kind of one of those things.
It was a big deal. It changed a lot of stuff. You know,
what you could do on your phone was so limited until the SIM card.
Yeah.
You know, they found a way to, you know, spread out the data, I guess.
Well, and you know, they've put Mama in the iPhone world so they can track me. And it's trust me, your kids are going to do this if they haven't already. So just prepare yourself. But
you did it to them. So
the good news is, I took their phones away from them so they couldn't text when it was not the free time. So I guess I deserve it. Thank you very much. I'll see all of y'all in Ridgeland. Appreciate you, Lance. Thanks for your help today. So glad Peaches could get by. And guess what? We'll see you next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
When you're searching for the perfect piece of recreational property, we hope you think of Mississippi Land Bank. For generations, we've helped people finance the land in North Mississippi that they've always dreamed of owning, whether for hunting or fishing or just to get away. We mean it when we say we're here for you every step of the way, because our lenders are landowners, hunters, and fishermen too. Visit us today at mslandbank.com. That's mslandbank.com.
residential propane use is affordable, efficient, safe, clean, and a reliable energy source that you can count on. Let propane enhance your home today. Visit propane.com to learn more. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's propane.com.
Hey, this is Bob.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.